Limited line included for a year. Plus, ask how to get a free 5G phone. Learn more at XfinityMobile.com. Restrictions apply. Xfinity Internet required. Unlimited line offer requires Xfinity 300 megabit internet or above. Taxes, fees, extra. After promo, regular rates apply. Reduce speeds after use of monthly data included with your data option. Data thresholds vary.
You understand the premise.
Yes, the premise is a promise.
And the promise is for our big bank.
To be like First American Bank.
No, no, no. We promise to try and be like First American Bank.
What?
It's impossible for us to be like First American Bank. They have the best loan deals in town.
Really?
Really. And First American Bank gives you a First American Bank loan specialist.
Yeah?
Who works with you every step of the way.
No.
Yes.
So no shuffling them around from department to department, person to person?
Just a First American Bank specialist to make the loan process quick, easy, and smooth.
Huh. So First American Bank can do everything a big bank like us can do and more.
Yeah, makes me nauseous, too.
Ooh, better idea. We just promised to be more like First American Bank. I mean, is more more or is less than more still more?
Oh.
We'll fool everyone.
Yeah, love it.
Thank you.
First American Bank, the bank that does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com or call us at 847-952-3700. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, Sox fans, this summer on Chicago Sports Network, watch Miguel Vargas, Chase Meidroff, and Luis Robert Jr. as they take on baseball's best. Sign up for your 7-day free trial at chsn.com. Download the app and stream the Sox now. Chicago Sports Network, where Chicago comes first. And this hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs.
Cubs win! Cubs win the ball game!
Listen to every game here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And always live on the free Odyssey app. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you in part by your local Hyundai dealers. WSCR Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Sports Station. The Score! Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Just needs to get one more out. Ground ball, backhanded Ortiz, throws off 1 foot, perfect! What a play! Man, Joey Ortiz, every day, Joey Ortiz is a human highlight reel right now. He's already had two brilliant plays in this game.
Yeah, this is against one of the fastest runners in baseball, and Brenton Doyle getting down the line, and Joey Ortiz throws a strike.
Priester's got a one-hit shutout with those 10 Ks.
Here comes the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Curveball again for Quinn Priester. His 11th strikeout of the afternoon. He is through 7 shutout innings here today in Milwaukee. A career day for the mighty Quinn.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
It's true, the Milwaukee Brewers are your team of the moment. The Brewers have won 8 of their last 9. They have won 22 of their last 30. They are 11 games over 500. They don't go anywhere. They don't. In May, there was a moment where they'd lost 6 times in a 15-game stretch without scoring a run. 6 shutout losses in 15 games. That was after a May 17th shutout loss to the Twins. They were 6 games back in the division. Since then, in 37 games, they've scored 191 runs. Only the Dodgers and the Rays have scored more in that stretch. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball. The Rays were last week's team of the moment with an explosive offense. And how has this Milwaukee offense found its footing? Jackson Churio and Christian Yelich are the key. Both of those guys, very, very talented hitters, extremely athletic, are healthy and athletic, and Churio is really starting just now to turn it on, which makes them kind of scary. And then they've got other pieces who've been doing pretty well in bits and pieces and fits and starts at different times along the way. But for the most part, they're just a really damn smart organization. In recent days, you heard the Joey Ortiz defensive highlight there from Brian Anderson. But Joey Ortiz homered for the 3rd time in his last 4 games just yesterday. And they find ways to get it done. It is quite something what they are able to do because of their scouting, because of their development, because of their synergy. Folks, they really are the Tampa Bay Rays of the Midwest. You could say Cleveland is, but I'll say that Milwaukee is because they keep on churning dudes out. Overall, when it comes to ERA, they're at 3.80. They are 12th in MLB. And, you know, that rotation with Peralta, and they've been hit and miss with guys like Quintana, and they've been doing it without, for the most part, Brandon Woodruff, who is making a rehab start this week and is going to be back soon. That rotation is seventh best in all of baseball at 3.45. They got a bunch of dudes, including the one you just heard there in the open, Quinn Priester. Priester, the former Red Sox pitcher, and he was elsewhere as well. He had an ERA of like 6.63 did Quinn Priester in just under 100 innings in MLB. And now, as a member of the Brewers, he's got a 3.35 ERA in 15 games. His last eight outings, the Brewers have won seven of them. He threw seven shutout innings and struck out 11 last night for Milwaukee. So there's Quinn Priester. There's these other starting pitchers that we've mentioned. And then they've got a kid. Oh, boy, do they have a kid. And their kid is Jacob Mizorowski, who throws everything incredibly hard. Dude has a slider that runs 96. You heard that right. It's outrageous. His fastball up around 101 or sometimes 102. He outdueled Paul Skeens earlier in the week with a lot of strikeouts against the Pirates. It sounded like this.
Got him! Strikeout number one for Mizorowski.
I would say both offenses had better lay off that high fastball today. 101 above the strike zone. There's no chance to be able to barrel that up. To foul it off is quite hard to do as well.
1-2 coming. Got him! 102, and he blows it by Cruz. He gassed him up. He blew him away. 102 miles an hour. Out away from Big O'Neill Cruz, and he could not touch it. The Pirates get a threat, and it was very quickly extinguished.
So, look, Tyler Alexander hasn't been great when he's pitched. Tobias Myers hadn't been great when he's pitched, but Priester's been real good. Quintana with a 3.30 ERA out of that rotation. And Chad Patrick has made 16 starts with a 3.72. And then there's Freddie Peralta, who probably will make the All-Star game at a 2.90 ERA, 8-4 in 17 starts. They're not going anywhere. And if the season ended today, it would be Brewers and Mets in a wild card series, the best of three to take place in New York, and the winner would get the Cubs at Wrigley in the NLDS in a best of five. How about a Brewers-Cubs NLDS? That's the way it would stand right now, but the Cubs got to get past him. They're just two games back. The Cardinals are close. The Reds are not as close as they had been earlier in the week. The Reds right now, what are they, five back? Maybe five and a half back? The Reds, I thought about them as a team at the moment, but the numbers aren't really there. Since they were 29-32, they're now 14-8 because they're 43-40 right now. So they're winning 14 of their last 22, but they're having a moment in my mind because of the approach, because of what they're doing. They DFA'd Jamer Candelario. They said, forget it, we're done with him. $25 million left on his contract. And the Reds, the little old Reds, are like, yeah, we need to play the young guys who are better. And Nick Kroll, the GM, said it. This is a statement of intent, he said, in the press release of doing that. The next day, they call up Chase Burns. And Chase Burns, their number one prospect, the number two pick in last year's draft, was absolutely filthy, striking out the first five guys. And then, two nights ago, Nick Martinez got all the way to ninth, having not given up a single hit.
Strikeout!
first time that he takes a game mound as a starter in a ninth inning. In the air, left center, Blade going deep in the gap. And that's a hit. Streaking through second, Brooks, stop sign at third. A standing pinch hit double for Diaz. A no-hitter for Martinez, spoiled with nobody out in the ninth. And here comes Terry Francona. Martinez has matched his career high with 112 pitches.
And I hope every single fan is on their feet, because this man put us on a show today, and he deserves this applause.
That is John Sadak on the call, among others, but John Sadak on the play-by-play. And you heard at the beginning of that, Martinez end the eighth inning when that place went crazy. Here's Terry Francona, the manager, on Nick Martinez finishing the eighth and heading into the ninth, looking for a no-hitter.
I mean, that's as nervous as I've been in a long, long time. I guess, you know, they say good things happen to good people. And, you know, the kid, what he did this week going to the bullpen, seemed kind of like he deserved that.
That's pretty cool. That's Tito Francona. His presence and existence there, obviously, is the other reason why I considered them for Team of the Moment, because of what's happening with them. By the way, same night as the Martinez, near no-hitter, Spencer Steer homered, and then homered again, and then did this.
Line to left! Sheets back! Three home runs!
Spencer Steer with a third home run. They got him from the Twins in the Tyler Mahle trade. So, I mean, they've been making some smart moves to load up, and now's the time for them to go get it. We'll see if they go and get what they need. Other teams I considered for Team of the Moment, the Astros, they've won 13 out of 17 now, had won 12 out of 15 headed in, but I've talked a lot about them and dissected a lot about them. And then there's this team from L.A., the Dodgers. They have won 11 of their last 14. The NL West was tight for a little while. Now the Dodgers are up by 6 games, getting all sorts of contributions from all sorts of different people. All right, we're going to talk to Aram Layton in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, Tito Francona, the aforementioned Tito Francona, apparently was teammates with Dave Parker, who we talked about last hour, in that final year in Milwaukee in 1990. I had no idea. Here's Tito on the late Dave Parker.
Oh boy, yeah, I played with Dave twice here in Milwaukee. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, you know, watching him. So I guess, actually, Jim told me right, you know, before the ceremony today, and I thought they did a really good job of honoring the players from 75, and then at the end doing what they did for Dave, you know, moment of silence. I thought that was really well handled, really well done. God, I know he was sick, and you know, we all did. I wished he could have been in Cooperstown this summer to get his Hall of Fame plaque. That would, I know I felt about it. I can't imagine how he would have. He was a big, lovable, you know, again, I caught him towards the end of his career. I remember being a young kid watching him make that throw. I think it was in the Kingdome in the All-Star game. You know, and then to get to play with him, that's pretty cool. He was funny. I mean, you could mess with him. Not too much.
You could mess with him, but not too much. My God. Tito's the goods. That's my favorite living manager in baseball. Apologies to anybody else. Council, Madden, you know, Torrey, any of the other great ones. Socha, Bochy. You know, there's a lot. But that dude, what he did in Cleveland, how he relates to players, how he relates to teams, helps them turn things around. What he did in Boston, my goodness. If you watch that that documentary on Netflix, not the new one about the Red Sox, but the one about the 03 and 04 teams with Tito replacing Grady Little, I mean, my God, just the way that they loved him and what his value was, would be very, very cool. Texture says, Speaks, you've called Terry Francona Tito several times now, just so you know. I do know that's his nickname. So I think we're good in either way. Did you say Ron was there? Did you say we had Ron?
We do have Ron.
We do have Ron from the South Side. Ron, did you have money on the Brewers? I mean, you're the book. Man, you're the house.
Hey, first of all, I agree with you hands down. Francona is absolutely my favorite. But I have to ask you a question. If Houston had beat the Cubs last night, because, man, look at me. You did misdirection, man, when you were talking about Houston earlier. I fell for it. I should have known. I said, Ron, don't let him do this to you. And you was like, and guess what? I did. Because I wait until, you know, hour or so before then. So the last two, it's just a slam dunk. But it was between Milwaukee and Houston. And you set me up. You was like, Houston. But let me ask you, would it have made it a little more difficult for you if Houston had won that game last night? Because what they won, what, five straight?
Well, yeah, would have been a big challenge. Absolutely. If they had risen up and won the first two, because I mentioned 12 of 15 coming in, so then they would have been 14 of 17. Yeah, it would have been very, very tight. But I might have made the editorial choice to go to Milwaukee just because I'd already talked so much about Houston. So this is where you really got to consider this kind of stuff when you're laying down the odds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't trust you, Vince. You said, and see, now I really dislike the Cubs. Look, I was on a roll. I think I had four straight or five straight. Yeah. So, all right, Speed.
Hey, man. Hey, look, go ahead. Yeah,
I just have to say this as a score list from day one. This is my favorite segment because what I have to do is watch the teams and kind of look at trends and stuff. I love it. Yeah. And then I try to see if I can beat you. But saying that, I was like, no, the Brewers. But I said, well, no, he's talking about you. You ain't right.
Thank you, Ron. You're the best, man. Appreciate you. I favorite segment. Ron's been around a long time. That's all right. We're on to something with Team of the Moment here. We're on to something. Sean, we're going places. I think it's the theme song myself. I think that's the big thing.
You think so? I can't imagine why you'd say that.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, man. All five of those singers on the theme song, really, they all
really
sound
have
good.
A really nice vibrato, the falsetto there. It's great, man.
Yeah. And they really sound together as they did in my in my bedroom in Los Angeles when I recorded that thing on a laptop in 2008.
That's you? I had no idea. All five of you?
All five of me. It might be more, actually. I'm not sure. Do we still have Robert in Indiana who wanted to contribute a song to the hashtag efforts?
We do have Robert, yes.
Robert, yeah, the hashtag efforts, it's a clunky hashtag. Operation Woo King Tuck, trying to make sure that Kyle Tucker falls in love with the Cubs and Wrigley to the point that he signs here and doesn't bother to go out and check in with other free agent options. But what do you suggest, Robert, for our efforts?
That's right, Speed. Yeah, first I was going to go with The Outfield. I thought that would be the appropriate band, but their last album was 2011 and a couple of their members have died. But then I looked at that song Tusk by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a line in there about ask him the latest on his throne.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I thought, Tusk. Well, that might strike a chord there.
Yeah, it's good. I need the USC marching band if I'm going to get that done, Robert. For anybody who doesn't know, Fleetwood Mac actually had the USC marching band, I believe, come into the studio, or they might have gone to them and recorded it. I'm not so sure, but I would need that for our version as well. Do you have any contact information for the USC marching band?
I have to go through Caleb to do that.
He could probably get it done. Caleb Williams could probably get it done. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you. I mean, I think the obvious one that needs to be done is the Steve Martin. I think I'm way overdue to do the Steve Martin. So and maybe other people have done it out there. I don't know. But now I've given it away. Just dump that. Sean, dump that entire exchange.
It's dumped. It's dumped. No one knows what you're talking about.
Pretend it doesn't exist. All right. We'll keep the ideas coming. What might the Cubs have to give up in order to get Sandy Alcantara or Mitch Keller or others. What do the White Sox have that's going to make people excited as trade chips, and what could they get from teams in need? Let's discuss all of those things with Aram Layton from Just Baseball. We'll do that next on The Score.
There's a swing and a miss by Trey Turner, who Sandy has finally retired for the first time tonight. Sandy Alcantara is in solo second place in franchise history.
Just like that, move past JJ and closer to Ricky.
How much you really want to give up for this guy? But he's kind of starting to get back to his old self again. I think he's got like a 2.74 ERA in June in his four starts. So he's got a cheap contract too. So you're going to have everybody in the world after this guy. He's the number one fish out there. People really want this guy.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That was Bob Nightingale talking about Sandy Alcantara. And it's an interesting thing to look at here. The game logs for Alcantara and try to figure out exactly what you got, because the overall numbers are bad. It's so funny. When you know, the Score tweeted out a take I had, because I'm a hot take artiste, as everybody knows. I'm an opinionist just looking for clicks. That's how I live my life. So Alcantara has been a guy who has had a lot of bumpy starts earlier in the year, and then had the four real good ones in June. Yesterday, not so good. In a 8-7 Marlins win that they won in 10 innings, Alcantara over 6 innings, 10 hits, 7 runs, all earned. So maybe the price goes back down. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about prospects and more with our friend Aram Layton, who joins us from Just Baseball Media. He joins us right now on the Scores Hotline, which is sponsored by the Circa Resort and Casino. Right here on 670 The Score, home of the world's largest sports book, is Circa, not The Score, but it's me, Speaks, with you, Aram. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Always a blast to be on.
Thanks for hopping on. Where is Alcantara now? This start yesterday throws me for a little bit of a loop, because I had talked to some people and watched some stuff, and it seemed like the stuff was kind of coming along and he was figuring it out with what he had. And then he just got absolutely lit up last night. What do you think?
Yeah, it was interesting, because through the first couple innings, I'm like, oh man, he's building on another one here. And I think, you know, you go to, even if it's a little bit of a decimated offense relative to what we saw early in the year, you go to Arizona and put in another good start, all of a sudden that narrative's going to really get some legs there. But after about that third, going into the fourth inning, things started to slow down a little bit, and barrels were starting to be found. Even though the stat line doesn't suggest it, it still seemed like a better version of Sandy in terms of the command. And that side of it has been really important, is just getting that feel back for the strike zone after a Tommy John surgery. But, I mean, I think we're clearly seeing, though, hitters are on it, though. It's not just about throwing strikes. If you're not hitting your spots, it doesn't matter that it's 97, 98, 99. Guys are going to get to it, and that seemed to be what happened a little bit later in the start. You saw the velocity wane a little bit as well. So it's a question that I think even the Marlins are trying to answer, is like, what exactly do we have right here, right now? Where is he at, and how quickly is he going to get, if at all, going to get closer to that 2022 version of Sandy?
I wonder if another good start would have exacerbated the trade soon, because I know the Cubs are interested in moving fast and moving early here, and maybe their interest would be enough to get another team or two, and then you can get the bidding going. But now with the step back, you wonder if that makes things pause just a little bit. And do you get a sense for what the Marlins would want for Alcantara? Because the money's interesting in terms of how much is left, and there's a couple years left, and the money's it's decent. It's certainly a lot more, obviously, than Edvard Cabrera, their other starter. And it's like, if you're going to eat 100% of that money, then maybe you give up a little bit less on the prospect list. So I've seen some terrible mock trades out there. Give me a good one from your perspective.
Well, yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing in terms of, you know, I think the proposal that I may put together, Cubs fans may understandably say, you know, for what he's doing right now in the unknown, I don't think we want to do that. Totally fair. But at the same time, for the Marlins, there's a couple layers to this thing where I think the Marlins could have traded Sandy in the past, and that's something that I think ownership has been a little bit apprehensive of, because like, if we're not getting a clear-cut, you know, franchise-altering return here, it may not be worth the continued optics nightmare of now moving one of the few very well-known names that you have down here, and a guy that you know, I think fans have really grown to love, that you know, they've been able to retain in South Florida. So I think for the Marlins, with two more years after this one, I think they can hold a little stronger and say, hey, we want to price him at a guy that's still going to be valued at least 60-70% of what he was before, because we feel like in the span of the next couple of years he can get there, and we don't need to move him if we're not going to get something that really helps us now. I look at the Marlins situation. If you look at their farm system and their big league roster, they've got some pitching. They're in a decent spot there, but they need bats. And they need bats that you can look at and say, hey, that's not only going to be a guy at the big leagues, that's going to be a guy that can be an above-average regular. And I think with what the Marlins generally target, Owen Casey sounds like a perfect starting point there. And I think that's something where I'd imagine Cubs fans aren't letting Owen Casey stop them from getting 2.5 years of Sandy Alcantara. But where it gets really interesting from there is I think the Marlins would want another good bat. And with the unknown of what Sandy may be this year for a team that's trying to win now, you don't know exactly what the Kyle Tucker situation is going to be after this year. It's going to be interesting, right? Because you could package those two prospects and maybe get an expiring player that maybe is throwing a bit better right now. I would imagine the Marlins would want Owen Casey and then another bat like a Jefferson Rojas as well. And at that point, is that something that maybe Cubs fans are a little bit apprehensive to? I'm curious what you would say about that.
Oh, my God. My mentions were filled with Cub fans who don't want to give up Casey for Alcantara straight up. Looking at his numbers on the big league level, and also thinking from a scared perspective that Kyle Tucker is going to be leaving and there's nobody else in the system who you could trust to possibly slot in right field next year.
So I do understand that perspective, and you know, Casey's a guy that you're hoping can grab that corner outfield spot afterwards. That's where it becomes a fascinating juggle, because I think for a lot of the other teams that may be interested in Sandy, it's like, okay, we're hoping he's going to help us make a run this year, but we also, it's important to us that he's going to be able to push for us the year after that and the year after that at a semi-reasonable price tag here. Because you know, even with it being $17-plus million, it's still less than the qualifying offer. And you imagine if Sandy was a free agent tomorrow, I don't think there'd be any shortage of teams willing to, you know, sign him to a short-term deal to roughly the same amount of money that he is owed right now. So from that lens, it's fascinating to me, because I almost wonder if they're if they may not match up quite perfectly, because you also have Sandy, who his innings are going to be somewhat managed. I don't know how. You know, you heard early in the year there was some rumblings that they would be managed. And I haven't heard anything about innings being managed, but it's Tommy John surgery that you're coming off of here. You don't know exactly how it's going to look later in the year, and if you're acquiring him, especially the Cubs, this run this year with the Tucker situation is very important. So you may not be getting the best of Sandy, and you may not be getting a full go Sandy for that first year. That first year seems to be more important to the Cubs than maybe some of the other teams that may be bidding for his services.
Aram Layton here on a 670 The Score. Looking at your updated top 100 prospects on Just Baseball, movers and shakers in the Cubs system. I saw that Moises Ballesteros jumped a lot for you. Was it based on the cup of coffee in the bigs, based on the continued production in AAA? What's that about?
I'd say it's the continued production. I've gotten several live looks in Arizona in the fall league. He was so impressive there. And then just watching him more in spring training. But honestly, the defense, you know, I've been very harsh on the defense and was very worried that it may not even be good enough to be part-time back there. But I think he's made enough strides, especially as a receiver, to be able to be if he's a 40 grade defender, that's gonna work just fine given how good he is offensively. And I've gained more confidence in his ability to at least get by in that regard. And we're seeing more and more now. Just the confidence interval in the bat is just ridiculously high as well, because, I mean, it's really hard to poke a hole in his offensive game.
RM, you talked on a podcast, on your podcast recently, about PCA's potential regression, Pete Crow Armstrong's potential regression. I wonder how what you're seeing now dovetails with what you saw on the way up and what you expected at the big league level.
Oh, man. I mean, this is I think, everything you were hoping for on the higher end outcome. And it was a hot takes episode, and somebody was trying to say that he's going to, you know, hit this metaphorical wall. And we tried to kind of measure it and say, hey, we can understand some of the yellow flags there, but there's also some things that he has really maximized. He has really leaned into the strengths to a point that he can probably overcome a lot of those weaknesses. But I do think when you have a player that's chasing 43% of the time, and especially against secondaries, that chase rate creeps towards 50%. It's going to be a roller coaster. You know, I think you're going to have those ups and downs. But with PCA, the thing that always stood out to me is he hits the ball in the air very consistently, and now he's hitting the ball a little bit harder than he ever has. And the thing that I think has helped him the most is he is doing damage on pitches that he never did damage on before, and even pitches outside of the zone. So if you're going to be expansive and you're going to swing a lot, at least be a guy that can do damage on pitches that most, maybe other hitters wouldn't even swing at. So I think that part has really been huge for him. And then one of the few 80s I've ever put on a glove in our scouting reports. And I think he has justified that 80 pretty easily. So that really raises the overall floor as well. But just seeing him get into that pull side and just air pull power consistently has been something that's been really awesome to see, because that's going to be the way that he's going to get to his numbers.
RM, if the White Sox may have found something with Adrian Hauser, I don't know what level prospect they're going to get for a guy making no money, who's a free agent at the end of the year, who they pulled off the scrap heap, you know, 2.5 months ago. But in 7 starts, it's an ERA of 1.90, and he shut down a really good Giants team yesterday. So, I mean, the money's nothing, so that's going to help. I wonder what level prospect that yields.
That might be one of those surprising deals where people are like, wow, Adrian Hauser got them back, like that guy. You know, I'm not saying it's a top 100 guy or anything like that, but you could definitely get a couple of decent prospects in the system, because I think what we're seeing is, especially with how high the price is for some of these top guys available, a lot of teams end up pivoting and they end up looking for these bargain deals. And then a lot of teams end up looking for the bargain deal. So the floor ends up getting raised on that opportunity as well. And all of a sudden, team might be willing to give up a top 30 guys, or maybe a guy that's closer to, you know, the middle of that top 30. I don't think those teams eating types. And you're seeing it, not only Hauser's numbers being 6+ almost every single time out there. So I think that's a guy that will ultimately get them, you know, a non-negligible return, especially with the financial aspect of it as well.
RM Layton from Just Baseball Media. A pleasure, man. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you as the deadline approaches.
I would love that. Always an honor.
Okay, thanks, man. That's RM Layton from Just Baseball. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. I wonder what's going to happen in terms of the Cubs' third base position, whether they're going to go out and try to do anything or just kind of ride it out perhaps a little bit with Matt Shaw. Matt Shaw with a couple of doubles the other night. Obviously, the defense has been absolutely terrific. And that is certainly a help. That's for sure. And helps you feel better about it. But offensively, they could use a little more. That's for damn sure. I'm headed towards the lineup here so I can check on what's happening. And there is your lineup with Justin Turner once again in the lineup, playing first base and hitting eighth, the right-hander, in against Framber Valdez. It is Hap, Tucker in right, Suzuki the DH, Dansby hitting cleanup at short, PCA at 5, the center fielder. Carson Kelly is your catcher today for Jameson Taillon. Nico Horner, the powerful one, at 7, then Turner. John Birdie gets a start in third base, which is interesting. He needs a start every once in a while. And Birdie, a skilled player, very fast, somebody I like seeing get a chance to start every once in a while. That's your Cubs lineup. We are taking you towards the Cubs and the Astros and the finale of their series. That's coming up a little bit later on here on 670 The Score. A reminder that The Score and the Cubs are celebrating 100 years of Cubs radio this Thursday night at Wrigley Field. That night, the Cubs will be giving away special Bluetooth speakers to the first 10,000 early arriving fans to commemorate the anniversary. That's pretty cool. Tune in to Spiegel & Ohms tomorrow from 2 to 6 p.m. for your chance to win one of those speakers. Chris Getz of the White Sox on their all-access broadcast from Friday. We'll let you hear some of that and from some of their director of hitting, Ryan Fuller. That's next on The Score.
They should have moved him during the winter. You know, I understand the logic was like, okay, let's hope he comes out to a good start, stays healthy, we'll get more value. No, that has not happened. So even if they have to eat some money in the contract and dump him for a fringe prospect, they got no choice. Because they're not going to give him a qualifying offer, so you're not going to get a draft pick out of it anyway. So, no, I think he's definitely gone. You know, they badly need him to play well here the last 4 or 5 weeks just to get some decent value from him.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That's Bob Nightingale on the White Sox and Luis Robert in terms of having missed their window. Yeah, the offseason, man. That's when it should have happened. Or early on in spring when he was starting to smoke the ball a little bit out there in Arizona. Remember that? We were calling for it. They absolutely missed a window to possibly get something, anything. They also would have had to eat some of the money to get something. It was the Reds we had heard were interested, and the issue was that the White Sox and the Reds could not agree on how much of the contract that Cincinnati was due to pay. So that is unfortunate. Will Venable was talking yesterday pregame about Luis Robert's injury, expressing, you know, how they can feel about him moving forward.
You know, still some soreness in the hamstring. Day-to-day will be available off the bench.
I feel like he's avoided concern of that of an IL stint.
To this degree, yes. But, you know, again, taking it day by day, And just seeing where he's at, but feel good about where he's at coming out of the off day, but knowing things can change. But, yeah, take it day by day and see.
You can let yourself get pretty bitter when you think about this situation, because you can start to combine it with other White Sox players that they held on to too long in terms of assets as things were starting to take a turn, and whether they got anything or nothing for those players. And then, this is where it gets dangerous, you could connect it to what the Bulls are doing in terms of how they hold on to their assets too long and then get virtually nothing and sometimes have to add something. Like how they didn't get a first-round pick as part of a deal for Lonzo Ball last trade deadline that was out there, along with Marcus Smart's bad money, but you do that every time when you're where the Bulls are. And instead, they just traded Lonzo Ball for Isaac Okoro yesterday to Cleveland. And so they're not either keeping Lonzo Ball as part of a young core and because they love the way that he plays, and they're also not getting anything of real consequence for him. So you could connect that, and you could get a very Reinsdorfian picture of things, and you could make yourself crazy. But we're not going to do that because it's just a baseball show. And because we believe in some of the new people in charge. Barfield, we've mentioned, Bannister, and Fuller, and more. Here's Chris Getz speaking to the long-term plan of the organization when he was on the CHSN All Access broadcast from Friday night.
You know, it can take some time. I mean, it can take 5 to 8 years to really realize, you know, how impactful or lack of impact a trade may have. And, you know, so obviously you're looking to get an immediate return and a player perhaps to come up here and produce out of the gate. Where we're at right now, obviously we're looking at the long-term health of the organization. Thankfully, an example, I guess, would be the Crochet deal. We were able to get a handful of players that were at the upper levels of the minor leagues, and we're able to see those guys getting comfortable now at the big league level between Teal and Mydroth and obviously Vargas from last year.
Yeah, I mean, well, Vargas is a different deal, but look at the Crochet deal, man. Wickelman Gonzalez is on the big leagues. Kyle Teal is here. Chase Mydroth is here. And Braden Montgomery is probably the best of all four pieces. So, and he's further down. Here's Chris Getz talking about that catching position where Caro and Teal are both at the big league level. And you got to feel as good about White Sox catchers as you have in a long, long time.
They're both doing a really nice job, and it's such a comprehensive position. The game calling, you know, building a rapport with the pitching staff, you know, plus just getting comfortable at the major league level, and then the offensive demands that come with being a major league player. So I've been impressed with those guys. You know, they work very hard with our pitching coaches, Drew Butera, our catching coach. But they've been impressive, and the nice thing is, you know, they can carry the load together and keep these guys fresh and productive. There's still areas that they need to improve on. You know, there's an opportunity tonight, you know, for an Edgar Caro to really dial in on what's happening in this game, and maybe he's able to do a little bit more pregame knowing that Kyle Teal is getting the start tonight. So we feel very good about the catching position. We've got Corey Lee down there in AAA. Matty Theiss did a really nice job. We were able to get a return there, but really getting these two guys up here, getting some playing time is a good thing for us moving forward.
Yeah, I feel a little bad for Corey Lee, who played like a young prospect who deserves some opportunities for a bad big league club like the White Sox are to try and grow at the big league level. But the other two are better. The other two are better, and they deserve the opportunities even more. I could foresee all three of them being up, possibly, and rotating some DH option and maybe a little first base option should the opportunity arise between now and the end of the season. And then the MLB draft is upcoming. What are the White Sox going to be looking for? I think we all know they need bats.
We're very focused on position players right now. Obviously, pitching is vital, and you can never have enough pitching depth. We do feel like our pitching is ahead of our hitting currently. But you also have to, you know, you're at the mercy of what the draft is providing. You want to make sound decisions. You want to bring in talent. You want to increase your prospect capital, so to speak. But we're dialed in on position players. That doesn't mean we won't select a pitcher at the top or, you know, the rounds following the first. But, you know, you don't want to get too dialed in on needs at the major league level. It's really overall what's needed within the organization. You know, we prioritize up the middle players, whether it be the catching position, which obviously has led to some of our trade acquisitions, shortstop, center field. You know, you start there and then you kind of work to the wings, believing that those players are the ability to play multiple positions. And of course, you know, you want them to go out there and have great careers at the major league level with Chicago.
So there's Chris Getz. And I wonder where White Sox fans are. And Cub fans, I want to hear from you as well. We've got some bonus hit and run. We are here until 12:40. Let's throw open the phone lines again, Sean. We took a bunch of calls earlier on in the show, and that have been kind of guest heavy. We've got some blue pits that we want to do before we get out of here, but I'd love to hear from you, the Chicago baseball fan, on a hot and steamy Sunday leading up to afternoon tilts on both sides of town. The White Sox on another Nancy Faust Sunday. If you're thinking about it, get out there and listen to one of the godmothers of all baseball organists. Just an absolute legend playing for another Sunday out there at Guaranteed Rate Field. And if you're going to get ready to watch the Cubs and the Astros with a tie-breaking tilt in their series, want to hear from you about the Cubs and where things stand. Could be the Kyle Tucker trade. Could be some of the needs, where you are on third base, how you feel about Craig Counsell, etc., all of it. And where you are with them in the division. The Brewers were the team of the moment. The Reds are also playing very well under Tito Francona. And White Sox fans, I want to know if you have some confidence that the organization has indeed turned a corner. If now when you hear Chris Getz, like you just heard Chris Getz, does he sound smarter? Does it sound like somebody you could conceive of trusting in an organization? Or does he still have the stink of the former Royal, the stink of the former, you know, utility player, grindy utility player, Reinsdorf handpicked, loyalty hire? I want to know where you are on that. So the phone lines are open at 312-644-6767. Let's talk baseball with you, the Chicago baseball fan, for some bonus hit and run right here on 670 The Score.